Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, February 18th, 2011, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It, of course, is time for the Federal News Countdown. And a distinguished panel of guests counting down the stories that they've chosen as the three most important federal news stories of the week. Tim McManus, Vice President of the Partnership for Public Service. Tim, good to see you.
Francis, good to be here.
And it's going to be two Fridays in a row, right? You're not on the countdown next week, but next Friday you'll be on the Dorabeck Insider. Chris is out all next week. And I'm going to be filling in for him, and you're going to come in and sit with me next Friday and help me grill the people that are going to be on the show. That's going to be a great time. Looking forward to that. My other panelist this week is Dan Mintz, who is the Chief Operating Officer at PowerTech Corporation and the former Chief Information Officer at one of the most important federal agencies there is, the Department of Transportation. It's good to see you, my friend. What is PowerTech Corporation exactly?
PowerTech is a small, woman-owned 8A growing. We do federal IT support, data center consolidation, help desk support, that kind of activity.
Are you tired of actually saying the words data center consolidation all in a row? Because you hear it, you can hardly turn around and take a breath without hearing people talking about it.
I expect that 20 years from now we could do this radio show and we'd be able to say it again.
I have every confidence that that's the case. You gentlemen have each chosen three terrific stories for us to talk about on the Federal News Countdown. So of course we'll start with
number three.
Third most important federal news story, according to Dan Mintz, is headlined, NARA digital archive costs could rise to $1.4 billion, says GAO. It's a Federal Computer Week story. This is about the Electronic Records Archive, and this is just, it's turning into one of the kinds of programs, it looks like, that we've been hearing about all week long with the release of the high-risk list.
Yes, for each of these stories, I'm interested both in the story itself and what it means in a more general sense.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, this is a project that originally was projected to cost perhaps around $300 million. Now they think $500 and some million, and it's possible it'll go up to $700 million or $1 billion mm-hmm. over a period of time. And there's all these reasons why not. And the reason why I think it's important is not just the story itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that even at the extra cost, it won't achieve all the functionality they had projected. But because it reminds us that with all the amazing advances we have and all the talk about cloud computing, like data center consolidation,
mm-hmm.
it's important to pay attention to the knitting, project management, and how to do that. Because at the end of the day, you've got to implement all these things.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the implications for projects like this are with the 25-point plan, the emphasis on chunking or segmenting or whatever you want to call it when it comes to project management, the idea that every 12 to 18 months you need to demonstrate some kind of results, and we're also going to be looking at these every 90 days or so. Is that the kind of thing that you think will help something like this stay on track, or is there another element at play here?
No, I think there's at least two aspects in the 25-point plan that are of value here. First of all, breaking these projects down into smaller pieces. One of the problems you have when you have very, very large projects is that no one person can even tell where they are.
Mm-hmm.
But the second emphasis that's also in the 25-point plan was an emphasis on establishing very professional project management capability, making sure all of these projects had trained and certified project managers who understood things like earn value and how to, in fact, manage them.
Mm-hmm. Dan Mintz's story number three on the countdown is NARA digital archive costs could rise to $1.4 billion, says GAO. It's a Federal Computer Week story, and it's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Tim, your story number three is from the Federal Times, and the headline says White House warns agencies to prepare for wave of retirements. This story could have been written 10 years ago, and it could have been written 20 years ago. And like data center consolidation, we may be seeing this thing 10 years from now. What's the deal with this?
We may exactly be hearing this, and we've heard it. You know, we referred to this as a retirement tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this week the White House came out and said, get ready for it because it is going to happen. And, you know, clearly, retirements have in the federal government have gone down over the past couple of years, largely in part to a declining economy. If you look at some of the numbers because of that, again, are you simply, you know, at some point it is going to be inevitable. So you are, the economy has simply pushed it off to some extent. From In 2009, from 2007, it went from 200,000 who departed to 2009, where it's just over 200,000. It's roughly kind of stayed in that same ballpark for the last several years. If we look at the big numbers, though, is if things were to rebound to the 2007 levels at that point, simply because that many more people are eligible to retire now, we'd be looking at over 300,000 people leaving because of retirement. Mm-hmm. So, again, you can see it off in the distance. I think the biggest question, Francis, is really at what point is that wave going to start coming in a little bit harder to hit the beaches?
I took a little comfort in one thing here, Tim, and that is the story says 25% of federal workers were at the retirement eligible age of at least 55 years old in 2010, compared with 15% in 1998. But, I mean, if we hear anything, it's that 75 is the new 65, and it trickles down from there. And so the idea that somebody would want to retire at 55 and be theoretically retired, not working for that long a period of time. Most people that get to that level in their federal careers like what they're doing and don't necessarily want to walk right out the door at 55. And that might lead me to think, at least as an outside observer, that people aren't necessarily in a hurry just because they're eligible.
I think certainly the 55 doesn't mean you're going to walk out the door. But what we have seen historically is that people haven't walked away at 55 or 57 and said, that's it, I'm going to go hit the golf links. Mm-hmm. Instead, what they've said is, okay, now how do I continue to leverage the expertise, the experience that I've had to do something new? So really, what's the career after federal government? I think that's still, a lot of the warning signs still out there that if you're eligible, are there other opportunities that you want to engage in after you've had really a long career in the federal government? Do you now have time to spread your wings and do something maybe entirely different than what you've done for the past 30 years?
It will be interesting to follow this just because, as I said, this seems to be something that comes up every couple of years. And I don't know what it will necessarily look like when it happens, because it's been promised for so long and hasn't materialized yet.
I think the key point, and what's the key point in the story, is that very little has changed, not only in the message that's being shouted from the mountaintops that people are going to be retiring, but also very little has changed in terms of how we deal with that as well. Mm-hmm. So the same issues of how you do knowledge transfer, how do you capitalize on the expertise that's actually walking out the door, very little has still been done with that. So again, if you use the analogy of the wave coming in, we keep seeing the wave coming in, but we're not doing anything different to prepare for that wave hitting the beaches.
The story number three from Tim McManus on the Countdown is headlined White House Warns Agencies to Prepare for Wave of Retirements. It's from the Federal Times, and you can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number two from Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service and Dan Mintz of PowerTech Corporation, right around the corner when the Federal News Countdown continues on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
The following statement has been authorized by Credit Guard of America. A nonprofit national helpline has been established to assist members of the public struggling with credit card debt. If you owe $2,000 or more to the credit card companies and are seeking relief, you are invited to call the toll-free helpline now for free information. 1-800-300-3320. This service is provided by Credit Guard of America, a nonprofit organization. The free helpline offers programs that allow you to cut your payments by up to half of what you're currently paying and reduce your debt to much less than you owe. Call the toll-free helpline now for free information at 1-800-300-3320. Again, a nonprofit national helpline has been established to assist members of the public struggling with credit card debt of $2,000 or more. Members of the public wanting to learn how to get debt-free and stay debt-free are urged to call the National Toll-Free Helpline now for free information and assistance at 1-800-300-3320. That's 1-800-300-3320.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight, brought to you by Cisco.
The nation has lots of cybersecurity strategies, maybe too many. Here's former Air Force Lieutenant General Harry Radege, now a member of the Commission on Cybersecurity for the 44th Presidency.
But we still, as a nation, lack the integrated national cybersecurity strategy. And that's where we think that tremendous effort is still needed.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
As cybersecurity threats loom, the federal government's demand for cyber talent is expected to far exceed the nation's supply of qualified professionals, and its ability to compete with the private sector for that scarce talent is increasingly challenged. The cyber talent gap poses a serious threat to America's position as a global power, making it necessary for human capital and cyber experts across government to come together to find current and forward-looking solutions to address this growing issue. We must explore how agencies can cope in this difficult environment by both developing and accessing top-notch cyber professionals and preparing the very best of this talent to lead. Listen to Cyber Hire, Ramping Up the Cyber Workforce, as part of the Booz Allen Hamilton Expert Voices panel series, featuring human capital and cyber experts from across government. Wednesday, February 23rd at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen, or visit the Expert Voices blog at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. The combined federal campaign, the goal to support philanthropy. Well, how's the CFC faring in the age of austerity? We'll talk to the OPM director, John Berry, about the world's largest and most successful workplace charity program. And you've heard that the internet is running out of, well, space, for a lack of a better term. We'll get an update on what this means to you this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown with Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service and Dan Mintz of PowerTech Corporation, and we're up to
number two.
Dan Mintz's second most important federal news story of the week on the Federal News Countdown is from NextGov. The headline is Army Taps Second Life for Troop and Family Support. And Second Life, it seems to me, had this run maybe 2 or 3 years ago where a lot of agencies seemed to pay attention to it for a period of maybe 6 months to a year, and then it kind of fell off the table. And so it was interesting for me to see this revived and see this interest kind of start to perk up again in this story that you brought this week.
So this is interesting on two levels, again, on terms of the story itself and then what it means. But I agree with you. What happens with these new bright ideas is when they first come out, people do them for the idea, and then it fails. Then sometimes people go back and say, how can I use this idea to improve my actual mission and tie it to the mission? That's why, particularly in government, looking purely at things like return on investment are much less powerful, even though it's a good thing, is much less powerful than how do you improve the government's interaction with its constituencies, citizens. This article is, so it's interesting, first of all, What they've done is there's a program in the Army in terms of helping the military and the military's family dealing with all the difficulties that a military family has. Parents will be deployed overseas, things like that. And this is an add-on to that where they have counseling and other resources that they can get. So they have avatars representing counselors. They've done things with generals, for example, with the children of soldiers to talk about what it's like. And there's an amazing statistics in the middle of it. Their website that this is a part of, now this is not just the virtual reality Second Life, but the website that this is part of, OneSource, has had over 1 billion, with a B, 1 billion hits. And when these families go into Second Life, they go in for long periods of time, as long as 90 minutes, they mentioned. The interesting thing to me, so that's one thing, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
The interesting thing to me, to some extent, is the fact that the Army, it's almost a non-story in a sense, that the fact that the Army is using Second Life, other than it's interesting it's come back, doesn't cause ripples. It's an accepted way, incremental way of doing interaction. When I was at the Department of Transportation in 2008, I did a pilot with Second Life for federal motor carriers just to get people used to the idea mm-hmm. that they'd be doing that kind of technology. And everyone looked at it, what's Second Life? They had no idea. This, the Army, as part of their fundamental supporting their mission, is using Second Life to reach out to its members. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing
to me. What'd you take away from this, Dan?
Yeah, it's actually interesting to me because I think the last go around when a lot of agencies jumped on Second Life, they seemed to be using it as a tool more for recruitment. The interesting thing here is this isn't actually about recruitment. It's how do we keep people engaged? How do we keep that communication going? Mm-hmm. And there were a couple questions actually as I read this, you know, as it applies to civilian agencies as well. How do you now take this model that really the Army has created here? How do you create that for an internal environment for your own employees to keep them engaged? So as somebody new coming into government, what are the hurdles? You know, they don't know who people are in the agency. They don't know the entire mission of every component within the agency. Is this actually a way that you can help plug them in through that mechanism? And I think most agencies never looked at it from how do we keep our current employees engaged with this? They looked at it simply as a communication vehicle or a way to connect with folks who were outside the agency trying to get in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say that organizations have to take it seriously. That is, if they just do it a little bit and people realize they're not serious, people won't use it.
Mm-hmm.
One other statistic toward the end of the article that is also very telling, the cost for developing the Second Life campus was $127,000, which for that kind of participation is an extraordinarily low number.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure Department of Defense spends many, many, many times that to try and do the same kind of thing. The entire virtual environment, the thing that had a billion hits, cost them $500,000. Which seems to me a very, very good investment in terms of money.
And again, back to your point about, you know, knowing what that investment is, I think that's actually, you know, one of the challenges oftentimes with agencies using new technologies is saying, yes, we're going to do this, but they either don't put the IT infrastructure in place, nor do they even put the staff support functions in there. And I think one of those that we've often seen, you know, on a recruiting front is with virtual career fairs or something like that, where they say, oh, this is easy to do. It's a low-cost alternative to do that. What they don't actually do is get the program managers invested in that as well, who are actually the ones who have to implement most of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
How do we think the agencies are structured to be able to attract people to these kinds of things when they're going to happen, the virtual career fairs? How do you let the potential job candidates know that this thing's going to happen? Are the agencies equipped to be able to do that? Because it seems to me the potential audience for Second Life is demographically set a certain way. I'm not likely to go into it. My son is much more likely to participate in something there. Are the agencies geared to think that way, do you think?
So by the way, and when you look at Second Life, I think there's the broader issue is using, in a broad sense, social media. This is one example. And I'd say the government in general has really reached out to try and do these kinds of things. I mean, if you look at the government agencies and departments that are, and individuals that are on Facebook or Twitter or is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, it's a very large part. Once again, though, the issue becomes you can't think about the technology first. You have to think about how can I integrate it into an aspect of the mission I'm trying to achieve, which that part isn't always easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to decide whether you're serious about it, because you can't just do it on a Thursday. You have to do it every Thursday.
Yeah.
You have to do it every week.
Yeah. Tim, do you think agencies are prepared to make that long-term commitment to doing something like this?
Yeah, I think certainly there are, you know, as always, Francis, I think there are agencies who are not only committed to it, but are actually doing it quite well. There are others who are still trying to struggle with this. What does it mean for us? How do we best use it? You know, it's almost the soup du jour for some as well, whichever, you know, whether it's Second Life, Second Coming, or it's Facebook or whatever, they're still trying to grapple with again, how does this actually help us achieve our mission? So I think on a recruitment front, I think there are a lot of agencies who are beginning to get it and who are actually doing it quite well. But I think there were a lot of lessons learned in that, which is we've got to involve the right people at the right points in time as well.
Dan Mintz's story number two on the Federal News Countdown is from NextGov. It's headlined Army Taps Second Life for Troop and Family Support. You can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Tim McManus's story number two is on tap next, and you'll hear it when the Federal News Countdown continues on In-Depth with Francis Rose. It's Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. Another day of attacks against anti-government protesters in Bahrain is bringing condemnation from President Obama. White House spokesman Jay Carney read a statement on board Air Force One.
I am deeply concerned by reports of violence in Bahrain, Libya, and Yemen. The United States condemns the use of violence by governments against peaceful protesters in those countries and wherever else it may occur.
President Obama is in Oregon visiting an Intel factory this afternoon, brainstorming with some of the brightest technology minds as he continues to go through the West Coast promoting innovation and job creation. Other news, Wisconsin state troopers have been ordered to fine the state Senate's top Democrat after all of the Democratic senators refused to show up for a vote. The bill in question would cut public workers' benefits and bargaining rights. And its bark may be worse than its bite, but the tiny Chihuahua ranks number 4 on the list of New York City's worst biting dogs. Pit bulls are the biggest biters in the Big Apple. Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
Good news, ladies. Ugly brown spots on your skin might feel like they're the end of the world, but they're not. You can fade those brown spots from view with Dr. Perry's Night Skin Cream. New customers can try Night Skin Free. Diminish the appearance of brown spots on your face, neck, and hands. Try Night Skin Free. Call 1-800-509-4152. Pay only shipping and handling. One per household. Call for your free Night Skin. Call 1-800-509-4152. That's 1-800-509-4152.
Hear that? That's the sound of one driver. Now, hear that? That's the sound of 40 million drivers. That's how many drivers choose State Farm Insurance. Why do more people choose State Farm? Can everyone please jingle their car keys? Sounds like the jingle of money. Money they're saving from all those State Farm discounts. Want State Farm to find you discounts up to 40%? Go to discountdoublecheck.com and see what you could save. Discount percentage and availability may vary by state.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Private investors have been encouraged to invest in clean energy innovation by seed funding made available through the Department of Energy's Advanced Research Project Agency, Energy, or ARPA-E. Department officials report in a little over 1 year, 6 projects that received a total of $23.6 million in seed funding have generated more than $100 million in outside private capital investment. The 6 projects, which received between $750,000 and $8 million each, focus on improving solar and wind energy technologies and advanced battery storage. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu says the projects are meeting the goal of the ARPA-E program to, in his words, swing for the fences and focus on truly transformative energy research.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees tier 7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Become an extraordinary leader through the Key Executive Leadership Masters of Public Administration program at American University. Taught by faculty at the top-ranked School of Public Affairs, the Key MPA program is designed for working professionals and offers weekend classes to fit your schedule. Learn more at an information session on March 1st. To RSVP, visit spa.american.edu/key.
Profile America, Friday, February 18th. One of the stranger firsts in aviation history occurred on this date in 1930 as part of the St. Louis International Air Exposition. A dairy cow named Elm Farm Ollie became the first bovine passenger to fly in an airplane. In fact, she was milked during the flight, and the milk was parachuted to the ground in paper containers. The event is celebrated each year by the Wisconsin dairy industry, second in the nation in terms of milk production, topped only by California. There are 9.2 million milk cows in the U.S., most of them permanently grounded. Together, they produce nearly 190 billion pounds of milk annually. Every ounce of that output is needed, since each of us consumes more than 600 pounds of dairy products each year. Profile America is in its 14th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
The Federal Managers Association invites all federal managers, supervisors, and executives to its 73rd National Convention and Training Seminar, Federal Managers Turning Policy into Action. On Tuesday, March 15th in Arlington, Virginia, federal managers will gather for engaging presentations including Hiring Reform, What It Means to Managers, The Future of Supervisory Training, and Managing a Telework Workforce. For more details, visit fedmanagers.org. That's fedmanagers.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week, as every week, involves two experts in the world of the federal government choosing the news stories they think are the three most important news stories of the week to people who work for the federal government or who do business with the federal government. And they rank them in order 3-1, and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown every Friday at 2. My experts this week are Dan Mintz, the Chief Operating Officer at PowerTech Corporation, and Tim McManus, the Vice President of the Partnership for Public Service. And Tim, your story number 2 on the countdown this week's from GovExec. The headline is GOP lawmakers seek to freeze bonuses and step increases. The president's two-year pay freeze was just that. It was a pay freeze. As long as you stay where you are, you will make the same amount of money for the next 2 years. But if you get promoted or whatever, there was some leeway there. And now that leeway, there are some members of Congress are trying to get rid of that leeway, too, it looks like.
Absolutely right. So, again, as you said, the president's proposal and was a two-year pay freeze. It did not affect or didn't apply to step increases, promotions, or other awards. So on Wednesday, an amendment was introduced to a spending bill that basically would deny federal employees step increases as well, would deny employees increases for promotions. So, Dan, we're going to promote you, but we're sorry you're staying at the same salary. So, it broadens the scope of what the president and Congress had put in place earlier.
I talked about the high-risk list with Jason Miller in the first hour of the program today. Congressman Issa said at the news conference where the high-risk list was introduced that 83% of federal spending is represented on that list, because Medicare, Medicaid are in there, and the number that I saw this week is that Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security comprise 57% of the total federal budget. I don't know if that number is exactly precise, and I can't cite the original source, but it sounds like it's in the right neighborhood. Tim, you're nodding your head. Yes, it sounds reasonable.
Sounds in the ballpark.
I understand, I guess, the spirit of where they're going here and the symbolism of where they're going here. But using the analogy that Tim just cited, Dan, we want you to do more. We want you to work harder, but we're not able legally to give you any more money to do that, and yet we still want to try to maintain a high level of morale and get you to stay in this job and continue to work for the government.
So somewhere in there was a question. So I think there's two challenges in this that this this story represents in the federal government. One challenge is the government, all organizations deal with an issue of how do you do the right thing for the organization, which may mean you're acting, doing person A does better than B, person B better or worse than C, mm-hmm. and equity, trying to treat everybody equally. And this shows up in acquisitions where people, you know, the desire to treat everyone the same ultimately ends up sometimes in very poorly resulting acquisitions. And it runs into this in personnel, mm-hmm. where there's a feeling that everyone should be treated in an equitable, consistent fashion. So the problem then leads you to the fact that you can't. It's very hard to say allow these 20% to have a pay raise, but that 80% not.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, the solution is treat everyone the same, which leads you to things that also don't sound very fair. The other problem in the government is it's politically so difficult to attack anything
mm-hmm.
that you end up also with the associated issue of, well, since I can't attack any individual program because there's a constituency that loves that program, I'll cut everything across the board, which is probably not the right answer, but you don't have an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a dilemma because certainly it doesn't sound fair on the surface.
Mm-hmm. What are you hearing managers telling you, Tim, about what this kind of thing means? I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think the likelihood of this actually happening is probably very high. I think whatever happens with the continuing resolution is going to go to a conference committee in the Senate, and I doubt something like that can make it out of conference. And yet, these things still have to be weighing on the minds of not just the employees, but the managers that are trying to figure out, how am I going to keep my good people?
Yeah, I think in general, Francis, you know, there's just such a great deal of uncertainty right now. You know, agencies are working under a CR for, you know, a couple more weeks right now through March 4th. By the way, Congress has a recess next week for President's Week. So that cuts into some of the time they're actually going to be working on, figuring out a spending bill. I think there's uncertainty in general. What does this mean? So, you know, every day you and I, the three of us, we turn on our radios, listen to federal news radio, and we hear another story about what might be in that spending package or not in that spending package. I think in general, federal managers are concerned. I think federal managers are concerned that this further erodes or contributes to the atmosphere that what are feds doing? Feds are overpaid, you know, blah, blah, blah. We've had that conversation over and over again. And I think ultimately, you know, when the initial 2-year freeze was pitched, it was that, you know, everybody's in this together, that everybody's got to have some sacrifice. And I think for the most part, you know, federal employees saw that as well, that, you know what, people out in Wisconsin are getting hit hard. People in California are getting hit hard. We're going to have to take a little bit of a hit ourselves. But again, I think when you start going then to those who are performing, Dan, I understand that you got to try to figure out where that fairness for all is.
Mm-hmm.
But let's face it, not everybody performs at the same level. Not everybody should be getting the same type of increases. And I think that's actually where it's going to be most devastating, is when people begin to look around, if in fact this does come to play, and say, you know what, I just busted my backside to try to get this job done, and I'm looking two cubicles down the road, and I'm actually not seeing that same level of commitment, that same level of time that's been put into this, and we're both in the same boat.
Yeah, though I will say, so I agree, but I will say you have that same feeling now, by the way. I mean, that you have this uneven
mm-hmm.
quality. Going back, Francis, to what you said about this not being passed, it seems to me what's going on is we're in a political game of chicken,
mm-hmm.
where you have two different perspectives on the role of government and the size of government. Both have some intellectual, you know, reasonableness. I mean, it's, you know, you can argue, reasonable people could argue either way.
Yes.
And no one really has yet figured out what the winning political position, the definition being what would help in 2012,
mm-hmm.
Is. And until everyone figures that out, it's not clear what will come out of this. In the end, the Republicans in the House and the Democrats in the Senate and the President have to agree to something for that something to pass. And any one of those three can stop it.
The story number two on the Federal News Countdown from Tim McManus is a GovExec story with the headline, GOP lawmakers seek to freeze bonuses and step increases. And you can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number one, as chosen by Tim McManus and also by Dan Mintz, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues, it's the Federal News Countdown. We'll be right back.
The George Washington Colonials defend the Charles E. Smith Center against the best of the Atlantic 10. Richmond, Charlotte, Temple, and Dayton invade Foggy Bottom in the fight for conference domination. Get your four-game ticket package today and be a part of the battle plan. Call 202-994-6050 or visit gwsports.com now.
How is the U.S. Department of Defense improving business operations? What is DOD doing to better use its resources, improve its stewardship, and provide the best support possible to the warfighters? And how is DOD leveraging technology and innovation to be more efficient and effective? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions and more with Dave Wettergren, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Newsmakers on In-Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 1 to 3.
Deloitte's Bill Eggers on reorganizing government agencies.
We have a once-in-a-generation chance to do this differently, to take advantage of all the new technologies, the new business models, the more horizontal structures, to create a different shape of what these agencies are going to look like. Flatter organizational structures, more horizontal.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by Dan Mintz, of PowerTech Corporation, the former CIO of Transportation, and Tim McManus, the Vice President of the Partnership for Public Service. And we're up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Dan Mintz, is from Washington Technology. And the headline is OMB puts $2 billion in IT spending on the chopping block. What jumped out at me at this story, Dan, was the fact that I think this represents a complete 180-degree turn now of what the discussion is in Washington. The question is no longer, will there be a cut or won't there? What will be cut? What won't? It looks like everything is going to be. It's a matter of how much and when. And when you think about the importance, as you talked about earlier, of IT and the pervasiveness of IT, this says to me nothing will be spared if necessary.
Yeah, there were two interesting things again about this article. One, though, the headline's a little bit misleading because in a whole bunch of agencies there are cuts being made, but then there are other agencies where there have been some IT increases. But yes, you're absolutely right. There are no sacred cows anymore. There's going to be cuts all over the place. The interesting thing to me was that there were cuts. That OMB felt, that Vivek Kundra and OMB felt that it had enough of a handle on evaluating programs and where they were and what their impact was, that they were willing to take a stance, a pretty dramatic stance in some cases, to be able to change the IT funding level. That's a big step.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do that because all of these IT programs, as all programs have constituencies that put them there. So the fact that there's a feeling that they can do that is pretty interesting to me.
You think it's justifiable?
I think it's desirable. At the end of the day, justifiable is a political question. Justifiable means someone's going to agree enough to allow to happen. I think it needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad. I think it's a great thing that this is occurring.
Mm-hmm.
It's I think insufficient to put things on high risk lists, so that's very important. We dealt with that when I was at Department of Transportation, but that it's important then to do something about it because of that,
mm-hmm.
and to reward those organizations that manage well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was important. and to me, very interesting. One perhaps less loud thing at the very end, and we probably want to talk about the IT, but at the very end, it mentions that Vivek talked about how he sees IT changing, not just in terms of measuring it and cutting it, but also saying things that the PC may not be the focal or the interface point to people anymore, and you have to start talking about things that are not PCs. I think that's also, I think he's right, and I think it's good to get that on the table because it'll take time for people to think through what that means.
I saw a stat recently, and my colleague Chris Dorbeck can recall the specifics of it, but one of the agencies measured something on the lines of almost 40% of the traffic on their website now, today, coming from mobile devices. And this is not something that we should prepare for this for 5 years from now. This is today already people are using our clunky, no disrespect intended, but they're using our clunky federal websites on their mobile devices, and they're struggling through seeing them on a teeny screen because that's how they want to access this information.
Yeah, I may have the statistic wrong, but I believe smartphones now outsell PCs. Yes, the United States is one of the few countries in the world that actually doesn't have, but overwhelmingly, the interface of the internet not being on a PC. The U.S. is actually a little behind that, but is rapidly catching up.
Tim, relative to the cuts that you see here, not necessarily particularly related to IT, but what's the general budget message that you take away from looking at something like this and the way the administration shaped its priorities?
Yeah, again, I think, you know, Dan hit the nail on the head starting off saying that this is no longer just about talks of, you know, possible cuts here, possible cuts there. I mean, there is going to have to be cuts. And you know, in this case in particular, they made some decisions to say, we think we have enough information. We think we know enough right now to say these are the areas where we think we have to cut. I think you're going to see more of that, not simply in IT, but across the board where we're going to have to make some really tough choices and say, we may not know absolute without a shadow of a doubt that this program is not actually achieving what it was set out to do or not, but you know what? This is the environment we're living in now. We know that it's not as far along as where we need it to be, and therefore, you know what? Funding may well be at risk.
The idea of doing more with less is what people are talking about over and over and over again. What I'm starting to see and what I'm starting to take away from stories like this is the idea of just doing without. There are some things that are just either not going to happen or not going to happen when we would like them to happen. And I think that might actually take more precedence than the idea of cutting what's already there.
And you know, in a lot of ways, Francis and Dan, that's probably the way that at least the partnership would advocate some of these really tough cuts need to happen, which is it's really difficult for anybody who's been in government or been in business when you say cut 15%, cut 20% of your budget. What does that mean? What does that mean for me accomplishing my mission? Is it better to do across-the-board cuts? And again, I think I've used this before, which is, you know, come at it with an axe, or do you take the scalpel at it and say, okay, these are either programs or individuals or whatever who are underperforming, and that's actually where the cuts have to happen. Now, I think the big question with the scalpel approach is, do you get to where you need to be?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say that it'll be interesting to see if the government takes the step beyond the ranking IT performance and start doing, continue its job or continuing the effort to do program performance. Because if you're going to want to cut programs and you don't want to do it across the board, you're going to have to drive toward an acceptable, again, in the public square method of determining how useful that program was.
Dan Mintz is story number one on the countdowns from Washington Technology. The headline is OMB puts $2 billion in IT spending on the chopping block, and you can read it and all of the stories we're counting down today on the Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Tim McManus is story number one when we come back on the countdown in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Are you a woman between the ages of 35 and 60 with noticeable fine lines and wrinkles? If you answered yes, we're looking for you. We are currently seeking women to try an instant skin-firming serum called Instant Effect. As part of this opportunity, we will send you a free trial of the product. and you may have the chance to appear in a national advertising campaign. To take advantage of this unique opportunity, please call 1-800-500-0365 in the next 10 minutes. Instant Effect is a breakthrough beauty discovery that tightens skin on contact and takes years off your appearance. Simply smooth the lightweight serum on your wrinkles and fine lines and watch as they disappear from view in less than 90 seconds. If you're interested in seeing how young you can look in as little as 90 seconds risk-free, you must call in the next 10 minutes. Instant Effect is now available at Ulta stores, but for this exclusive free radio offer, you must call 1-800-500-0365. Hurry, when this offer's gone, it's gone. 1-800-500-0365.
Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. For example, if you have a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you're going to end up paying over $400,000 after interest. That's almost a quarter of $1 million that you could be putting into your pocket instead of the bank's. I want to send you a powerful free CD to show you how. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. That's right, no credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. It's easy, it works.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
Stop getting robbed of your money and your future. Call now and I'll rush you a free CD today. Call 1-800-500-2884. For your free CD, call 1-800-500-2884. 1-800-500-2884.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. Every Friday at 2, two experts in the world of the federal government choose three stories they think are the most important to people who work for the federal government, rank them in order, and count them down on the Federal News Countdown. They're all posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. My experts this week, PowerTech Corporation COO Dan Mintz and Tim McManus, the Vice President of the Partnership for Public Service. And Tim, your story number one this week is a story that from PolitiFact. And the headline is, John Boehner says 200,000 new federal jobs have sprouted since the start of Obama's term. PolitiFact analyzes this and rates it false. And I'm wondering if you think that the number is really that important one way or the other to the point that the speaker's trying to make, which is government's getting bigger and it's got to get smaller. Is that even where the debate should be?
Yeah. The number is really not all that important, although we would take issue with the speaker's numbers a little bit as well, particularly as you look at the ratio of federal employees to the general populace. So if you look in 1989, there was one federal employee for every 110 residents.
Mm-hmm.
In 2009, it's one federal employee for every 147 residents. So ratio has gone up, and what they've been asked to do has expanded as well. So that's actually the more important story. I think more importantly than even the number, whether or not the size of the federal workforce has gone up, the size of the federal workforce has gone down. The real issues are really twofold, I think. One is, there's really no consistent good way to actually count. So if you look at this story, you look at BLS numbers, and BLS numbers say that the Bureau of Labor Statistics say that it increased by almost 150,000 federal employees from January 09 to January 2011. If you look at FedScope, that same time period, it looks like 107. So what is it? Not quite sure. If you look at some other numbers, you know, somewhere in between there, some lower. Two issues. One, that we can't actually put our finger on how many federal employees there are necessarily between a certain period. But more importantly than that is the perception that we need to do more with less, the perception that government is too big, is actually troubling when we, again, going back to that ratio, it's not simply less federal employees now than were, you know, 15 years ago. It's what are they doing differently now that we weren't doing before. We didn't have a TSA in 1989. We weren't providing airport screeners. We're living in a new world now. Does that require different types of both competencies, but also different size of government?
Mm-hmm. When you heard the "so be it" comment that has made Speaker Boehner even more famous than he already was, especially in the federal community over the last week or so, what'd you take away from that, Dan?
He needed a new speech writer. I think what you sort of intimated, Francis, is sort of the issue that's going on here. What's really causing the argument is not the number. I mean, we can argue the number, and we can talk about should it be 1 to 100 or 1 to 150, or are they efficient or inefficient? I mean, when I was in the government, having been most of my life in private industry, I can assure anyone who cares that the federal workers I met were hardworking, dedicated, caring, professional people mm-hmm. you would love to be working with. It was a wonderful time to be there. They try very, very hard. The issue on the public square is are we comfortable that the amount of money we're spending is causing a return in a way that is meaningful to me, and whether government is doing functionally the kinds of things we want. And the challenge here is we have radically different perceptions by almost an evenly divided country.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the argument that's playing out now, and a lot of the very large bills that passed in the first 2 years of the current administration is feeding into that argument. And you're going to find politicians all over the place taking symbolic stances that is really that fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what that underneath all this is that fight.
And Dan, I would love it if that were actually the fight around functionally, should we be doing that? But that's actually not the rhetoric that's happening right now. The rhetoric is around federal employees paid too much, too many federal employees, lazy bureaucratic federal employees. The conversation, at least right now, is not about should federal government be doing X, should federal government be doing Y. It's about we've got a big, fat, bureaucratic organization.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two very different conversations. So if you can have – if the conversation can move to functionally should government be doing X, then you can have the conversation about if they're not doing X, then we don't need people doing X.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think we'll find we sort of agree on this. But the issue is that it's very difficult to attack the individual programs and get away with it politically.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you attack it indirectly. And I agree with you, that's not what should happen, but that's why it's happening.
An excellent countdown, gentlemen. We're out of time, and the Dorbeck Insider can't wait to do his last show before he goes away for 2 weeks. And so, Tim, you'll be back next Friday, and we'll continue this conversation. Dan, you'll be back on the Federal News Countdown before you know it, whether you like it or not. I'm going to draft you, even if it's against your will.
I'm always pleased to be here.
I'm happy to have you. Tim, great to see you again. Federal News Countdown posted later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com. Dorbeck Insider's up next, and I'm back on Tuesday with a brand new in-depth with Francis Rose.